Today's presenter is David Hare. David works for the administrator, administration, and security team of WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Support. He has been in this role since April 2005. His focus is primarily on helping customers resolve problems with their security configuration, SSL communication, administrative console, or WISE admin problems, and general system administration problems. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to David.
All right, thanks, Elijah. I'd just like to also say welcome to everybody for joining. We appreciate you guys joining us. As mentioned, we are going to be talking today about how to administer a WebSphere application server environment using the WSAdmin scripting tool. So if we continue on to slide two, we see the agenda for today's call. So we'll start off with just a general overview of WSAdmin. You may or may not have seen in the document on the website that the difficulty level associated with this presentation is intermediate. So the presentation assumes some prior knowledge, at least some introductory level knowledge of WSAdmin. So you'll see that throughout the presentation. We also, it's good to have just a basic understanding of the WebSphere configuration structure and the hierarchy, just the basic overall config. So after we go through the overview of WSAdmin, we'll look at how to modify configuration objects. We'll then look at how to perform operations, actually just basically invoking methods, on objects through the mbeans. We'll then look at an interesting section, which is I can do it in the console, so I know how to do it in the console, but how can I do it in WSAdmin? And finally, we will go through some hints and tips and then some debugging techniques. So if we move on to slide three, the basic WSAdmin overview. So as you know, WSAdmin is the WebSphere application server scripting tool. It is used to, you know, configure and administer a WebSphere environment. You can deploy applications, perform various runtime operations. You can think of it as basically the admin console at the command prompt. The command invocation is simply wsadmin.bat for Windows or .sh if you're in a non-Windows environment, and that's under the bin directory. We support both the Jackal and Jython scripting languages. As most of you probably know, Jackal has been deprecated in WebSphere 6.1. And what that means is simply that we will continue to support Jackal for the next two releases of WebSphere. However, there will be no new function for Jackal. So Jython has now kind of emerged as the preferred language. So all the examples that we go through today will be in Jython. Continuing on to slide four. Here we have basically just the most basic commands, the most common commands that someone executing WSAdmin would use. So the first command, WSAdmin, with no arguments, simply takes us to the WSAdmin command prompt. At that time, you can enter any number of WSAdmin commands. The second one prints out the syntax usage. Gets the help on how to use the WSAdmin command. If we provide the dash C argument, we can execute a single command, and this saves us the time of having to go to the actual WSAdmin command prompt, and then after we execute our single command, having to exit out of that. And then finally, we have the minus F option where we can execute a script file. So you can put a series of commands into a file and then just pass the file name and it'll execute that series of commands. So let's move on to slide five. WSAdmin provides five command objects that anybody can use. We see here those are admin control, admin config, admin app, admin task, and help. So we're going to go into quite a bit of detail today on admin control and admin config. Admin app is used for administering applications, so we can list applications, we can install, uninstall, you can update an application. And then the admin task is a feature that's getting more robust each release that WebSphere provides. And there's a lot of functionality that's available in the admin task commands. Those are very useful. We won't look into many of those today. And then finally, we have the help, which you can use to obtain help about any command. So if we move on to slide 6, let's talk about how to modify a configuration object. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at basically a pattern, a number of steps that you can follow, and then we're going to walk through an example following that pattern. So first we'll introduce the pattern. Step number one is you need to find the appropriate type of configuration object. So you might, you know, if you're new to this configuration object, you might not know what it is, if it's an object that you have not worked with before. So there's two options on how you can find the appropriate config object. One is you can use the command print admin config types, and that will print out all the different configuration object types. The other option is you can look up the list of config types in the documentation in the Information Center. And there's a link there. And so basically, if you were to click that link, you would see that it'll take you to the page in the browser where we have a list of all the different configuration types. Once you have identified the type you are interested in, we can list all of the configuration objects for that type. So step two, we have print adminconfig.list, and then in the parentheses, you would put the type that you found in step one. Now, step two will very likely return more than one config object. So you can narrow that down by specifying a parent. And we'll go into a lot more details about that. But the basic syntax for that would be the exact same command, print adminconfig.list, and then in parentheses you'd have type, except you would add a second argument. So after type, you would have, you know, a comma, and then the parent of that object. And we'll see that more here in a minute. So let's move on to slide 7. So, as I mentioned, step 3, if the previous command returns more than one object, you'll want to narrow that down before proceeding. So we'll see some programmatic ways that you can do this. You can always just simply copy the line for the config object you're interested in and paste it, maybe assign it to a variable. So assuming you have narrowed it down to simply one config object, step 4 is, well, let's see what all the attributes of this object are. It's always a good practice to see what the current attributes of an object are before you try to modify them. That way you can be sure you're modifying the correct attribute. So the syntax for that is simply print adminconfig.showAll, and then the config object that you just found in step 3. So moving on to slide 8. Step 5 is, after we've printed out using the show all, we see what the value is that we're interested in, we can modify that. So we could just simply execute adminconfig.modify, the same config object, and then we're going to specify the attribute that we want to modify and its new value. So what value we want to change that attribute to. Now, after you execute that command, You always want to perform another show all. So this is step six, to verify that the changes you made in step five actually worked. So once you run that command, you'll see if your new value is displayed. And then finally, of course, as we all know, anytime we make a configuration change in the console, you have to click on the save button there. And similarly, in WSAdmin, you have to execute adminconfig.save. So now that we've gone through the basic pattern for this, let's look at a real-life example. And for that, we'll continue over to slide 9. Okay, so on slide 9, we'll look at an example. And the purpose statement here for this example is that we want to change the monitoring policy setting, maximum startup attempts, from 3 to 5 for the application server, ROM App Server 1. So, of course, this is just an example. You could use the same pattern that we're going through now to modify virtually any config object. So, the first step is we need to find the config object we're interested in. So, if we pull up the config object API, you'll see there I've already provided the output. There's a config object called monitoring policy. So there's no space there. So that would make sense that that's the config object we're interested in. What you want to do is once you click on one of these config objects in the API documentation, scroll down and look at all the different attributes. So we see there at the bottom of slide 9, attribute summary. And I don't have the whole screenshot there, but I have the part that's important to us for this scenario. The first attribute is maximum startup attempts. And so there's the description there. This is the number of times it tries to spawn the process from the node agent. So what we want to do is change this attribute's value from 3 to 5. So if we go on to slide 10, the first thing that we're going to really do here is we want to list the monitoring policy configuration objects. So we execute print adminconfig.list, and then we supply our config object in parentheses, monitoring policy. As you'll see there, it returns 4 different config objects. And you'll see I've bolded the difference between them really is the server name. And so that makes sense. You know, if we're working in a network deployment environment, you're going to have more than one server. So, if you're working in a base environment where there's only server 1, you're not as likely to run into these type of problems. However, most of us are working in a network deployment environment. So we can see here, I've got 4 config objects returned. The one in blue is the one we're interested in, ROM App Server 01. So there's a couple different ways we could specify this config object. I could simply copy that text and use that. That's perfectly legitimate. I could simply assign this output to an array, and I'll show you how to do that in the hints and tips section. Or we could specify a parent, and that's what we're going to do here. So if we move on to slide 11, I'm going to identify the parent config object. If you're working in a network deployment environment, this is a very useful command to get to know. It's simply adminconfig.getid. And then you want to specify the server. So in this case, we're going to specify server colon ROM App Server 01. That's going to get me a reference to the ROM App Server 01 config object. And you'll see there, I've assigned that to a variable called my server. So the only difference between that command and the previous command is that my server equals. That just means I'm assigning it a variable, the output of the command. So now what I can do is I can use this as a second argument when I perform the list. So if we see in step four, we're going to list the monitoring policy config object for the ROM app server 01. I'll say admin config.list, monitoring policy, that's the config type that we're interested in. And then as a second argument, I'll just specify my server. And as you can see there, I've also assigned this to a variable, mymp. It's just a good clean practice to use variables. Helps you, you know, have much shorter commands. It's easier to type. And so finally, just to verify that I've actually gotten a reference to what I want, I can just execute print mymp, and we see there I have the monitoring policy config object for the ROM app server 01. Now let's move on to slide 12. So now that I have the reference, let's print out the attributes of it. Print admin config show all mymp. So we see there that that configuration object has five attributes. And the one in blue is the one we're interested in. Maximum startup attempts, and the value is 3. So this is the guy we want to change. So in step 6, let's change it. Admin config.modify, mymp. Now I'm going to specify the attribute and the value. Maximum startup attempts, 5. So let's see what the result is on slide 13. So if I print the attributes again, we see there in the blue highlighted text that maximum startup attempts now equals 5. Then finally, we want to save the changes. So that's a quick example on how you can modify pretty much any configuration object. And you don't have to know anything about what attributes are available, what the config object is. You can simply look in the API documentation and then find the config object that makes sense, look at the attributes, see if you have a match, and then perform these steps. So this can be used to modify pretty much anything in the configuration. Continue on to slide 14. So now we're going to look at using the admin control object. And this is really useful to perform operations. So what we want to do here is identify a running NBeam and then execute an operation on it. So if you may or may not know, NBeams are basically just a Java bean. They conform to the JMX specifications. So the WebSphere administration design is all based on JMX, which is just a framework that provides a simple and standard way to expose Java resources. So those Java resources in WebSphere are identified as NBeans, which is just short for management beans. So what we're going to do here is find running NBeams. You can think of that as just running resources in your WebSphere environment, and invoke operations on them. So again, we're going to walk through a pattern, and then we'll look at an example. So step one is to find the NBeam type you are interested in from the NBeam API documentation. So all the NBeams are listed in the InfoCenter doc. There's a link there to the one for 6.1. I don't believe I mentioned that before. The link in the config API documentation was also to 6.1. Once you have identified the NBeam that you're interested in, we can search it. The command syntax for that is just admin control dot complete object name. You could also use query names, and we'll show both. And then you're going to specify the NBeam search criteria. And you'll find that search criteria from the API documentation. So this will make sense here in a minute. So the format is always going to be WebSphere colon, and then you're going to want to put in an asterisk per wildcard, and then go ahead and specify the type. So my MBean type would be what you found in the API documentation. And then again, it's always a good practice to print out what the result was. So I assigned that to a variable A, so we'll print A and see what the value was. So moving on to slide 15. Once you have the MBean that you're interested in this case we've assigned that to A, you can use the MBean API documentation or the help object, which we saw earlier, to determine the available operations, the available methods that we can invoke on it. So there's an example syntax for using the help. You would just execute print help.operations and then our MBean, A. Finally, once we've identified the operation that we want, you can execute it. AdminControl.invoke, A is our first argument, that's our MBean. My operation, so that's the method or the operation that you found that you want to invoke. And then any number of arguments. It could be a zero argument method, it could have five arguments. Whatever the case is from the API doc, that's what you'll need to follow there. And so those just, you keep adding them on, comma separated. So now that we've gone through that pattern, let's look at an example of this. Slide 16. So again, this is just an example. We could use this for any MBean and any operation. So the purpose for this is to find out what is the value of the JVM custom property javax.net.ssl.truststore. So this is very useful for support when we're trying to debug SSL problems and there might be some type of SSL handshake exception. So step one, we look up in the MBean API documentation and we see that there's an MBean called JVM. So you'll see there, under partial object name, I've highlighted the search criteria that you want to use. WebSphere, asterisk, type equals JVM. So you'll always find out what the type is from the API documentation. So we'll use this here on the next page. So if we go on to slide 17. So now that we've identified the MBean, let's search for it. AdminControl.completeObjectName, WebSphere, asterisk, type equals JVM, and I'm going to go ahead and specify process equals server 1. So as we saw earlier, this is a network deployment environment. I have 4 servers. That command would have came back and told me that I found more than one hit for your search results. And we'll see that a little bit later on. So the more specific you are in your search criteria, the more you'll narrow down your search and get just one MBean back. And so there I've assigned the variable server1 JVM to that. And so we simply print that out. Now, you'll see the highlighted blue text in that output. That symbolizes what was matched from our search criteria there. So you'll see there's many other parameters we could have supplied in our search. For example, we could have said name equals JVM. We could have said platform equals proxy. There's many, many parameters there we could have supplied to help narrow it down if you get in a case where you're getting multiple MBeans returned. One important note. This command will only return the MBean if the server1 JVM is actually up and running. So MBeans represent running objects. So if server1 is not running, this would return nothing. So let's go on to slide 18.
Now that we have identified and found the server1 JVM NBean and assigned it to the variable server1 JVM, let's list all the available operations we can run on that using the help command. So I execute print help.operations server1 JVM. Now I have not included the full output of this because it's very long. There's tons of operations you can execute on the JVM NBean. But I have included and highlighted the one we're interested in, which is the get property call. And we can see the get property call requires an argument be passed. The get Java vendor, get Java version, for example, do not require any argument. So now that we've identified the operation, we can continue on to slide 19, and we can actually execute that operation. So we're going to run admin control.invoke server1 JVM, that's the NBean. Get property, that's the operation. And then I'm going to specify my single argument, which is javax.net.ssl.trustdoor. So essentially, I'm asking the JVM NBean, please tell me what is the value associated with the system property javax.net.ssl.trustdoor. And we can see there that it immediately returned the value is the dummy server trustfile.jks under the etc folder. So let's continue on to slide 20. So the next part of the presentation is one that I guess we see a lot of in support. As mentioned in the introduction, I work in the WS admin support team. That's part of our role. And we see many, many PMRs where it has been identified that I know how to do this in the console, but I can't quite figure out how to do this in WS admin. Perhaps the documentation's not clear. Perhaps I just can't find it in the documentation. Could be any number of things. So one thing to note in 6.1 is there was a new feature introduced called Command Assistance. So if you're navigating in the console, you perform an operation, there's a chance on the right side of the page you'll have the option to see what WS admin equivalent commands would produce the same behavior that you just did in the console. Now, probably only 10%, maybe less than 10% of all available operations in the console are actually working with command assistance when 6.1 was released. So you've probably noticed that you can't quite figure it out with command assistance all the time. That is going to be continually improved as new releases of WebSphere come out. They'll be adding more and more functionality to that. So back to slide 20 here. If you know how to make a change in the console, you can figure out how to do it in WS admin. And we're going to walk through that pattern and then an example. So step one is you need to have a baseline of your configuration to compare. Essentially what you're going to do is perform the change in the console, see what changed, and then work backwards to figure out how you can make that change in WS admin. So step one is we need a baseline of our config, a backup copy of it, to compare the changes to. So one utility that WebSphere provides is the backup config utility, which is under the bin directory. You're certainly welcome to use any backup utility you want. Step two is actually go into the console and make the changes. And after you make the change, you'll perform the save. So slide 21. This is just a screenshot showing that what we did was basically in the console under the application servers, Server 1 page, we have enabled the startup bean service at server startup. And as you can see there, that's simply a checkbox. So the goal here is to figure out how to perform the equivalent operation of that checkbox in WS Admin. Okay, so let's continue on to slide 22. After you make that change, step three is you want to identify what file under the configuration actually changed. Now, the method that I listed there was to actually just kind of search through your config and see which file was modified most recently, so you can identify the file that changed. But there's actually an easier way to do this that I did not put in the presentation. You can actually view the changes that the console is going to save, and it'll show you what file has been modified. So in this example, the file that modified was the server1 server-pme.xml file. So we might not know what that file is for, what's in it. We might not have never even worked with it before. But in step four, all we need to do is open up the new version of the file, and then here's where our baseline, our backup copy, comes in handy. We open up the old copy of the file, and we compare the two. And in step four for this example, we'll see that there's an XML tag, startup bean service, XMI colon ID equals startup bean service underscore one. And then there's an attribute there, enable is equal true. So in the old version of this file, that enabled equals false. Now, you're probably asking yourself, why is this startup bean service in blue highlighted? And the reason is that is the configuration type. So whenever you see XMI colon ID equals, this is just a little tip, XMI colon ID equals, that's going to be your config type. So there's a config type startup bean service. And if we look in the config documentation, you'll see that it's one of its attributes is enable equals true or false. So continue on to slide 23, which I just mentioned. The startup bean service is the config object that needs modifying, specifically the attribute enables equals true. So, now that we know what the config object is, and we know what the attribute is, we can perform the exact same steps that we looked at earlier in the modifying configuration steps. So let's continue on to slide 24. So again, we have four servers in the environment, so we want to specify a parent to narrow it down. So I say server1 equals admin config get ID server colon server1. Now I'm going to pass server1 as the second parameter in this next command. Admin config dot list startup bean service server1. So essentially we're listing the startup bean service configuration objects for the server one application server, for which there will only be one. And we've assigned the output of that to the variable SBS. So the third command you see there is we print out the value of SBS. And there's some blue text again there. We'll see. One key thing is you'll see the file, server-pme.xml. So we just saw that. We know, okay, that's good. We're working with the right file here. And we see startup bean service. So that's good. That's the same configuration object we were interested in. So now if we execute the fourth command, show all the attributes of SBS, we see there's two. Enables equals false, and properties. So obviously this was done after that checkbox had been unchecked, so to speak. So then the next command is we want to modify that attribute, which we saw earlier, adminconfig.modify SVS enable and set the value to true. And then again, a good practice would be to do another show all, and we would see that enable equals true, and then we want to save that. So you can pretty much follow those steps to make any change in the console. You can also make that same change in WSAdmin. And that's the basic flow of how you would go about doing that. So let's move on to slide 25. Let's start looking at some hints and tips. The hints that we're going to look at are how to retrieve an object from a list. So we saw this earlier where we specified a parent. We'll look at a different way to do that. The second one is using the dash interactive mode to generate a working command. This is a very useful command, or very useful technique to use. And I think you guys will see that as well. And then the third is narrowing down search results with query names and complete object names. And we kind of looked at that before. We'll get into it more here. So slide 26. So what you see here is retrieving an object from a list. The first command, print adminconfig.list virtual host. What that's essentially doing is printing out all of the virtual host configuration objects in our cell. And we see from the output that there's three returned. The blue highlighted text will show you the differences in the three. You guys are probably more than aware that there's an admin host, a default host, and this one also has a proxy host. So let's take the example that I'm interested in, default host. We see that one's in the second position. What we could do there is we can assign this output, these three virtual host config objects that are returned, we can assign that output to an array. If you're familiar with Java or object-oriented programming, you know that an array can hold a list of objects. And then we can simply specify the location of the object we're interested in. So let's look at that. The second command there, bolded, it says host equals, so we're assigning the output of this command to the variable host. And the command is adminconfig.list virtual host. So that's all good. That's the same as the previous command. And now here's where it gets interesting. .split java.lang.system.getProperty line separator. So essentially what that is doing, it's taking the output of the above command where three objects are returned. It's going to find where the line splits to a new line, and where that occurs, it's going to take the next line and assign it into a new position in the array. So essentially what this does is we have an array called hosts with three objects, admin host, default host, and proxy host. And this is probably a lot more intuitive for people that we mentioned earlier that have a Java background. So there in the second command, this is why it's really beneficial. You can just say, I want the one at array position 1. So in object-oriented programming, the first position in array always starts with 0. So 0 would correspond to admin host. So as I mentioned, we were interested in default host, so that's actually position 1. So I could just say default host equals hosts 1, the object in the array at position 1, and then I print out the value of default host and we see there that it is the default host virtual host configuration object. So that's a real easy way that you can programmatically identify a specific object. So there's no copy and pasting there. You don't have to worry about finding out who the parent is. You know, it's just a little bit more work that you can throw that in a script, and that'll work no problem. So let's move on to slide 27. So you may have seen this in the Information Center. Perhaps you guys have even used it. A lot of the admin app commands and all of the admin task commands, I believe all, contain an interactive mode. So the interactive mode essentially, it kind of mimics the console where you're just sitting at the command prompt and it'll prompt you with questions that you simply answer. So examples of commands would be admin app, install interactive, and then your ear file, your application. There's an edit interactive. There's a bunch of admin tasks, as we mentioned. There's, you know, just some examples there, modifying server ports, mapping users to roles. So this is really beneficial if you're working with a command that you've maybe never used before. You're not sure about the syntax. Maybe you've tried some things from the Information Center, but it's just not working out or it's not clear. You can always use the dash interactive mode and just simply answer the questions that get prompted to the screen. Now, the reason this is beneficial, if we continue on to slide 28, the reason this is beneficial is you might want to set up a script that you can run on 100 different environments. So you don't want to be sitting at the command prompt doing this interactive mode on 100 different environments. Well, what we can do is use the dash interactive mode to tell us what the actual regular command would be. So we'll go through the pattern here and an example of that. What you want to do, you have to enable WSAdmin tracing for this. So step one is you want to open the file wsadmin.properties. These steps, step one and two, are documented in the WSAdmin must gather, which you guys have probably seen if you've ever had a PMR on a WSAdmin problem. And that's going to be linked at the end of the presentation. So you have the wsadmin.properties open. Step two, we need to uncomment the following line. And to do that, we simply remove the pound sign. So that's going to enable WSAdmin tracing after we save that next time we execute WSAdmin. So step three is we execute the interactive version of the command. In this case, we're going to install an application, adminapp.installInteractive, and then we provide the application name and location, sibws.ear. Step four is simply answer the questions that get prompted to the screen. Some of the questions will be, I did not include a snippet of the questions here, but there'll be something like, do you want to deploy EJBs or do you want to pre-compile JSPs? You know, what server do you want to map this to? Things like that. So let's move on to slide 29. After you've deployed the application using the interactive command with WSAdmin tracing enabled, open up the wsadmin.traceout file. By default, that will be located under your logs folder. It won't be under a specific server, just the log root. Then look for this message, the WASX7278i. And you'll find a line in that trace that looks something like this. Obviously, it would differ depending on the command you run, but that message ID would always be the same. So what you see there is generated command line, and then we have this blue text, This is basically telling us the equivalent command if we just did the admin app install and not the admin app install interactive. So, if we take this blue highlighted text and continue on to slide 30, we can see the single generated command to install this application using the options that I wanted, that I selected at the command prompt, would be adminapp.install, the ear file name, and then, comma, the same blue text options, precompiled JSPs, distribute app, etc. So, as you can see, this is extremely beneficial if you're working with a command that you're not familiar with, you don't know the syntax, perhaps you're trying some things and you're getting errors back just because the syntax isn't right or you're passing the wrong option. This is an extremely easy way to get the foolproof command with the exact options that you need. And so, obviously, this could be expanded into a script file depending on your environment and deployed out to, you know, all kinds of different environments. So, slide 31. The last tip that we're going to look at is narrowing down NBeam search results. So, here's just a basic example where we say admin-control.completeObjectName, WebSphere, asterisk, type equals application. So essentially what that is doing is searching for all the NBeams of type application, which just means we're searching for how many applications are in our environment that are up and running. As we can see there, we get a message with a warning that says basically that my search matches 10 different NBeams. I'm only going to return to you the first one. And again, I've highlighted in blue the part that matched our search criteria. So here's the main difference between complete object name and query names. I could have executed admin-control.queryNames and then the same WebSphere asterisk type equals application. The difference is query names will return every single NBeam that matches that criteria. Complete object name will just return the first one. So you should use query names in cases where you're pretty sure there's going to be multiples returned. If you're, you know, just trying to find one, then you want to use complete object name. Not really a big deal to you guys, but behind the scenes, complete object name is essentially doing a query name. And we'll see that in the debugging of the traces. So, if we see a message like this, the tip here is how do we narrow this down? Move on to slide 32. What I've done here is I've just specified one more attribute, name equals management EJB. And we see there, I don't get the warning message anymore, and I'm returned one NBeam, the NBeam that corresponds to the management EJB application. So again, you can take any attribute that's in that output for the NBeam and specify it in the search criteria to help narrow down your search. So this is really useful when you're using the query names. You'll get a list of all the different NBeams that are returned, and you can see what attributes are different between them to help narrow down your search. So that concludes the tips section. If we move on to slide 33, we'll look at some problem determination and debug techniques. So, the first thing you want to do is enable the WS-admin tracing, and we just kind of went through that earlier. We have to uncomment the line in the WS-admin.properties file. Now, step two is key. Unless the problem is purely syntax, where you're executing a command at the command prompt, and it immediately returns that, you know, you're missing a closing brace or, you know, you're missing a parentheses or something like that. Unless you're getting that kind of issue, then you really want to enable tracing on the server side. So when determining the server side, that's when you kind of have to understand the WebSphere environment, as we mentioned earlier. WSAdmin, as you guys know, in a network deployment environment, connects to the deployment manager. But if you're invoking an operation, say you're invoking start server, the D manager is going to be sending the request to the node agent, and then the node agent is going to try to actually launch the server. So you have to understand the flow of what's happening. So step two is, I want to enable tracing on each server process that is involved. So in a case like we're trying to launch a server process through WSAdmin and it's failing, we really want to enable tracing on the D manager and the node agent, because the node agent is also involved in that request. So there'll be cases when you really want to enable tracing on the D manager, the node agent, and the application server. So with the WSAdmin trace, you could have four different traces that you've got to kind of follow through to follow the request and see what's going on. Now, the trace string there, admin equals all, that just covers the basic administrative part of the code. Depending on what the problem is, you might have to enable different trace strings, and if that's the case, it's probably best to have the IBM support rep working on the PMR recommend that trace to you. For example, if you're having an authentication problem, you would want to get security tracing as well. But these are some good debug techniques that can be taken before a PMR is opened. So after you've enabled tracing on the client, WSAdmin, and the server, step three is to run the script or the commands with the tracing enabled, and then review the server-side trace.log and the WSAdmin.traceout. So, slide 34. We're going to walk through an example. I had WSAdmin tracing on and server-side tracing on when I executed the get property call on the JVM NVM a while ago, where we were looking at the performing operations part of the presentation. So the first step, we want to open the WSAdmin trace and find out what was the actual command that was executed at the command prompt. So this is very useful for situations where maybe the WSAdmin interpreted what you entered differently than you intended it to. You can see exactly here what WSAdmin executed, what it thinks that you entered. So just simply search for the WASX 7090i message, and you'll see there executing command server 1 JVM equals admin control complete object name, and then our MBean search for the JVM MBean on server 1. That tells me exactly what was executed at the command prompt. So if I continue on to slide 35, now that I know what was executed, as I mentioned before, complete object name actually does a query names in the back side, really. So it's the same thing. Just complete object name will only turn one. So what we see here in the server side trace, we see a query names call, query names entry for WebSphere type equals JVM process equals server one. That's the exact same MBean search that we used. So this is the corresponding request on the server side. If you pull up a trace and look for query names, you'll get tons of hits. So you have to look at what was the query, what was the search request. So we can see this matches ours. If we just follow down a little bit farther in the trace, we see there the query names exits. So the query names method entered above, and now it's exiting. And the return value that it's returning is the full MBean representation for the JVM MBean on server 1. And again, I've just highlighted in blue the part that matched our search criteria. So we see here the query names returned successfully. So let's go on to slide 36. As you guys know from earlier in the presentation, after we did the query names,
we then invoked the method. So in the wsadmin trace, we see we executed another command, admin control.invoke, server 1 JVM, get property, Java XNet SSL trust store. So now we want to search for the invocation. So we search slide 37. We search for the invoke. And you'll see there's an invoke on the JVM mbean. You see our mbean search result highlighted again. And we see there the method or the operation that was invoked, get property. Now, you won't see exactly what the arguments, if any arguments are passed. You don't see those in the trace. You do see how many arguments. So I believe there was a 1 in this trace snippet, which was not copied over into the presentation. But it'll tell you how many arguments were passed. So again, we follow down just a little bit farther in the trace, and we see return object value equals, and then the dummy server trust file under the etc folder. So you can see here how you can follow a request from WSAdmin into the server-side tracing, see what values are returned. Obviously, this was a working scenario. If there was a failure here, we would find out where the failure occurred and see what might have caused that. Maybe the wrong number of arguments. Maybe the operation was mistyped or spelled incorrectly. Could be any number of things. So let's continue on to slide 38. We're now going to start looking at some references before we conclude the presentation. Here I've just linked the WebSphere 6.1 Info Center. The part that's in red is the most interesting for WSAdmin scripting administrator. So you see there's a server configuration interfaces link and an mbean interfaces link. Those are simply the two documentation links I provided earlier. So we have the config objects and then the mbean APIs. So if you're ever in the information center, that's how you would get to them. Just expand the reference book. Then there's some examples and some commands that you can always look at. Slide 39. Here's some very beneficial links to have. The first one is a link to the IBM Redbook site, to the V6 System Management and Configuration Redbook. There's a lot of good information in there about the JMX architecture and mbeans, WSAdmin examples. The second link is a basic programmer's guide that was written a couple years ago when 5.0 and 5.1 were the releases of WebSphere that were out. But the same basic fundamentals, you know, still apply. So that's a very good link to have for reference. Third link there is just another link to the Information Center topic, scripting the application server environment. And that's kind of like an introductory page where you can get to pretty much anything you need to about WSAdmin from that page. So that's a good starting point. The fourth link is the Jacl to Jython conversion tool. So as mentioned earlier, Jython is now the preferred language. If you're having issues where, you know, maybe you guys want to migrate everything from Jacl to Jython, you could check out this tool. It is noted in that page that the tool is not foolproof. You know, if you're running a conversion of your Jacl script to Jython script, you'll want to test it out. Definitely don't just start running it like in your production environment. You'll definitely want to test it out and review it, because it doesn't convert everything exactly, you know, as you might have intended it to. But it's definitely a good start if you're not sure, you know, where to even begin. And for most of the common things, it actually converts with no problem at all. And then the last link there is just to the must gather for WSAdmin problems. It is very, very beneficial to our support team if
you have a WS admin problem and you open a PMR, if you provide the documentation in that link, that will greatly expedite the process of getting a resolution. Slide 40. So just in summary, the main things to take out of today's presentation is that you can use the admin config object to modify virtually any configuration object in your config, any attribute, and you can use the pattern in the example provided to kind of help walk through that. You can use the admin control object to invoke pretty much any operation on any MBean. And again, there's a pattern and example given there to help you walk through that. And then finally, just, you know, if you know how to do something in the console, but you're not sure how to do it in WSAdmin, you know, make that change in the console, and you can work backwards and figure out how to do it in WSAdmin. And so once you do it that one time, you'll know how to do it forever. And again, there were some hints and tips in there that aren't in the summary that are pretty beneficial as well, such as the interactive tip. So slide 41. Finally here, we just have some additional WebSphere product resources that you guys might benefit from. The first link there to DeveloperWorks, obviously that's a huge asset. There's tons of technical information on that site. There's a link there, the second one, to other webcasts and conferences coming up for WebSphere. We have the WebSphere.org user group community. Fourth link, the IBM Education Assistant. There's a lot of good education material on there if you haven't been to that site. And they're self-paced modules, so, you know, there's an audio and a slide that you walk through, and you can just go through it at your own pace. There's modules for, I think, pretty much all the major components of WebSphere, as well as other products. You can always sign up for the My Support emails, get heads up on any hot issues coming out or be notified of fixes and when they're going to be released. And then also there's the ESR tool, which is very beneficial for updating PMRs and viewing them online. And, you know, I always recommend that to my customers because ESR tool is the only way that you as a customer can verify for sure what text gets put in the PMR, so you can describe the problem in your own words as opposed to calling in support and explaining your problem to a support rep and then having them type it up into the PMR. There might be some confusion there, but if you put it in your own words, you can verify exactly what gets into the PMR. And then again, you can always look at the status of the PMR just, you know, anywhere over the world, around the web. So that concludes the presentation. Thanks, everybody, for attending. Now I'll turn it back over to Elijah.
Thank you, David, for a great presentation.
And we will go now first to Laura Gazzelli with University of Florida.
Hi, my question is about enabling the WS admin properties. You mentioned on slide 33 that if you set the admin to all tracing on each server process involved. My question is, do we do this in the properties file, the WS admin, on the deployment manager, on the app server profile and all, in all the profiles involved, or how do we do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. That wasn't really made clear in the presentation. I apologize for that. But and the must gather link for WS admin, it talks a little bit about how to do that. Basically, the server side tracing you can enable through the admin console, or you could do it through WS admin, which we hopefully can show you how to do that today. But so. The WS admin side tracing, the client side, you actually enable through the properties file. That was step one. But the server side tracing you do in the console. And if you're in your console, on the left-hand side, there's like a troubleshooting section. And under there, there's logs and traces. And that's where you could enable that. And another point, which is if you're running WebSphere 5 or 5.1, you would actually have equals enabled at the end of that. So it would be admin equals all equals enabled. But that was dropped at 6.0 and onward. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, so the server is on the tracing property, the logs and trace, is that the one?
Yes, logs and trace, and then I think you click on diagnostic trace service.
Okay.
And then, or if it's like 6.0 or 6.1, it would be change log detail levels.
Right, but you could do it for each individual app server right here too, correct?
Yeah, so you would want to enable that tracing on the D manager, and then depending on what the problem is, you might want to do it on the node agent and an individual application server.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from Sanjeev Joshi with Altel.
Hi, my question is, can we modify the web.xml for a WAR file deployed?
Yeah, so the web.xml, anything under the config directory should be modifiable via wsadmin using the admin config command. So the web.xml is under the config directory, under the applications folder, and down through the deployments, then the WAR file, and then the WebINM folder. So I think you should be able to modify that file via the WSAdmin tool, but I would have to double-check on that to be sure.
Okay, thanks.
And our next question will come from Krishna Aleti with J.P. Morgan Chase.
Hi. I was not in front of my computer, but I dialed into this conference. My question is, you did mention that there is some line that has to be uncommented to enable admin tracing. But do you mind mentioning the line that should be uncommented?
Sure. On slide 28 of the presentation, in step 2, it talks about what line to uncomment. So this is inside the wsadmin.properties file.
Right. Okay.
And so the line is com.ibm.ws.scripting.tracestring equals. And then the trace string by default is com.ibm.star equals all equals enabled. So you simply uncomment that by removing the pound sign.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, you may do so by pressing star 1. We will go now to Andrew Pierce with UNUM.
Hi. The question I have applies to probably all WSAdmin versions, and would that be, is there a way to pass command line arguments to WSAdmin that might be, say, a node name or whatever that you might use in commands to add admin control or admin config?
So do you mean when you execute the WSAdmin.bat utility, can you provide arguments there?
Yes. Like in addition to the dash F with the script name.
Okay. I think there is an option you can provide that will allow you to provide some. If you do the wsadmin minus help,
mm-hmm.
It'll list like, you might have like a dash Java option where you can provide a Java property or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure there is one to provide a command arg. I don't know it off the top of my head, though.
Okay.
But what we can do is after the presentation, I can get your email, and I can look for that, and I can send you an email.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Sure.
And as a final reminder, that is star followed by the digit 1 to ask a question. Our next question comes from Jerry Carlin with Bank of America.
I usually get lost when I'm trying to look for API things. Do you recommend going in through the, it seems like through the WebSphere Information Center to get to the APIs that way? Because there's lots of documents that have various APIs, and I've quite honestly gotten lost. Would you say that's the best way?
Yeah, definitely. If you go into that info center and just expand that reference section, and then depending on if you're looking for the config API or the NBean API, you know, that would determine which link you click on, but that's definitely the best place to go to. Something I didn't mention in the presentation is if you guys don't have access to the internet, you can actually find these APIs under your WebSphere install. Obviously, those aren't updated by the documentation team here if there's a problem and they need to get updated. So it is recommended to always use the Info Center version. But under your WebSphere installation directory, you know, where you have config and logs and all that stuff, you'll have a directory called web, W-E-B. And under there is all the documents.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you for presenting today.